Welcome, 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 folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Bards Rise. I am your host, Michael Dean. So, thank you, thank you, thank you. I haven't spoken to you all in a bit, so I have some slides to address that, and let's get right to the slide deck. First, we're going to start off with an ode to Bob Grant and the Andrew Cuomo salute in memory of his father, Mario Cuomo. Hey, Andrew Cuomo, ascoltami, sei proprio un sfacin. I hope that brings back very fond memories of Bob for you and for everybody else that knows Bob Grant. He was a true warrior of his time. So I've had some computer issues. So there were no shows for June 12th and June 19th. If anybody happens to be looking for those or was looking for them, that's why you couldn't find them. Major computer problems. And the first show back was on June, it would be 26 with Antonio. I did a live with him. And I hope you all enjoyed it. I've heard some good feedback from that show. Also, with Antonio, I have done two live interviews with him that go on for about 2 to 2.5 hours each show. And you can find those on his Facebook page. I've included links to those two interviews or shows with him. One on June 24th, that was the first, and then another one just 2 days ago, July 1st. The first one, I'm pretty sure you're going to need a Facebook account in order to get into it. I don't have a Facebook account, so I wasn't able to open up and listen to the show, but I was for the second one on July 1st. So if you are inspired to tune in, I hope you enjoy it. All the best to you. Housekeeping. So a few shows ago, I showed this same picture on one of my shows, and I was, of course, lambasting the Freemasons as they deserve to be. And I pointed out this picture that this young man, a young, what appears to be an African American man, probably about, I don't know, 10 years old, maybe 12, with a bride's veil over his face, with wearing a black bow tie, white shirt, and black pants, being escorted through a sword arch by other Freemasons, and an old one who's basically has this young gentleman by the arm. And this post on Instagram, the channel is One King of the Street, numerical One King of the Street, goes on to explain what this ritual is about. And basically, he says that the Freemasons bring these young boys in as a means of kind of like adopting them and being their surrogate and shepherding them through life. That's what's on the outside. I'll tell you what these people are doing is actually courting these young men and brainwashing them. By courting, I mean energetically connecting to them, stealing their energy, and starting to implant negative thoughts, which opens up to eventually the embodiment of negative entities. And there are lots. There are dark aliens and dark entities, two different things. Ron Amatron talks about that extensively in his shows. I highly recommend that you go and listen to those to get educated if you don't know about that already. Next, I need to inform everybody that this is going to be my final show. I've pretty much said everything that I wanted to say in starting this show. There are a lot of different areas that I could go down and start commenting on this and that, but I feel that if I'm not bringing new content, original content to the floor, then really I'm just another, talking head. And there are enough of those out there. I can't justify the expense. It's becoming more and more difficult for me to put these shows together, especially the slide decks. I just can't devote the mind energy to it. And I'm sure you have better things to do than just to sit there and listen to me ramble off at the mouth about commenting on different issues. Interviewing Antonio is a different issue because I try and pull the information out of him. So I'm happy to do however many shows he wishes with him, because when he talks, that just inspires me to ask questions about what he talks about, and hopefully that provides a good base of knowledge for everybody, me included. So thank you, thank you, thank you to all the listeners, and thank you especially to all the supporters that I have had. Regardless of how long you supported me for, or to the extent, I truly, truly do appreciate all of that financial support, as well as the well wishes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you all. Continuing with the housekeeping, a couple of shows ago, I was talking about narcissists and cluster B personalities. And it dawned on me that I did not talk about this one woman, Sandra L. Brown. On this slide, six, you see two women sitting down. The one with the pantsuit is Sandra L. Brown. She has a master's degree in social work and psychotherapy, I believe. And the other one is a real estate individual who's interviewing her. And Sandra has written the book, which is also, I have the cover on it here and a quick snippet that I found on the internet. She's up to her third edition on it. And in that, she also talks about some of the pioneering research that she was responsible for. She connected with this one organization that put together this questionnaire that tried to determine what narcissists focused on, what traits they were attracted to and targeted in selecting their next victim. And she said that, and she explains a little bit of it here in the interview, but more so, I understand, in the book. I haven't read the book. But when she first looked at the results of this test, she thought it was a flop because she expected to see a bell curve. And instead, what she saw was peaks, right? Really sharp responses, high responses in certain categories. And the person who, her contact person for the organization that did the testing, called her and said, "Wow, this is amazing." She says, "What are you talking about? You know, I expected the bell curve." She says, No. What we have here is definitely helpful. It seems that by this research, narcissists target individuals with certain types of qualities, such as loyalty, you know, commitment, dependability, honor, stuff like that, that they personal traits that they themselves find valuable, right? And things that we as society try, or at least we used to try, to aspire to. And those are things that the narcissists actually hone in on. So for all the gentlemen out there who consider themselves, you know, loyal and true to their word and all that, you are a target by female narcissists. And that explains so much in what happened in my life personally and how I was able to fall prey to that. Because I kept going back to, well, it's not perfect, but you know, you made a commitment. You got to stick to it and got to be loyal and all this. And that's really what kept me in it, including my devotion to the children, right? And yeah, you need to at least be aware that that's what's going on. And the same thing for women too. Old school, you know, stay loyal, one marriage, etc. Doesn't work when you're in a relationship, a dysfunctional, abusive relationship with either a cluster B guy or gal. So I just wanted to bring your attention to that. It was really, really helpful for me. Hopefully, it will be for you as well. Next, in my past shows, I've also talked about basically weeding out, rooting out Freemasonry in the secret societies, and I don't shy away from that at all. Well, not too long ago, I discovered that I'm not the only one with that mentality. In fact, during World War II in Vichy, France, the Vichy government banned all Freemasonry within their government because they knew it was absolutely corrupt to the core. Now, granted, after the war, we thought we won, but we didn't. They did away with all those laws, and that's how France eventually fell and became, you know, the hellhole, the sewer that it is now, just like all of Western Europe and the United States as well. at least until Donald Trump came along. And now he is draining the swamp worldwide, galaxy wide. And thank goodness for him. Also, I have the first page of that article, which is on the website, to the left of this slide, 7. And you'll notice at the bottom, it says page 1 of 7. So there are 7 different pages for this. It was too many pages for me to post all of it in this handout, but I want to just point these 2 pieces of information out to you. I also included the actual link to get to that, the article, if you want it. It's up there in the light blue and yellow. I think that's light blue. I have a lot of problems with colors. But hopefully, if you're interested, you'll be able to find it. I'm sure you will be. Next, shout outs to a couple Instagram accounts. First, we have I Am Zeffy Y. This individual, who I believe is AI, is talking about how the only way we win this war that we're currently in with the cabal, the deep state, is by waking people up. Their power lies in secrecy. Ours lies in awareness. So we need to spread the truth. And that's what I intend to do with this show. I got out some of the best information I could to you all, how to fight the system if you are dragged into it, how to avoid the system, if at all possible. We aren't always able to avoid it, though. So, thank you for putting that out there. I agree with you entirely. I am Zeffy. The next account is Number Master 22, also on Instagram. This is a woman who talks about how she and her entire family is essentially going back, her lineage, her bloodline, were all Masons. And she would talk about, or she talked about, the sins that they would commit against other individuals, families, ruining people's lives, taking their stuff. And she finally had the intestinal fortitude and moral clarity to come forward, come clean, and expose them for what they are: felons, liars, cheats, corrupts, corrupt individuals. Now, it's funny because I say felons, and a lot of people would say, oh, you know, yeah, felon, and just have that roll off their back or over their ears. But understand what a felon is. You know, if you're convicted of a felony in this country, you cannot vote. You cannot own a firearm. You know, you cannot hold a security clearance, or at least you have to go through more rigorous investigation in order to get a security clearance. If you are even granted one, there are serious ramifications with that, with being convicted of a felony. So when I say that these, you know, Freemasons and these judges, especially in New York, at least 97% of them, conservatively, are all felons, you know, a lot of people like, oh, yeah. And again, it just rolls off their ears. But if I was to tell you that they're scum-sucking Masonic pieces of dog shit, if they're baby killers, if they're pedophiles, right? If they're pedivores and they murderers, that hits home, right? And then you say, oh, wow, that's dirty language. Well, I say that for the hyperbolic effect, because for me to just say, oh, they're felons, really doesn't land the way it should. So forgive me for dropping F-bombs every now and then. I do get emotional about this stuff at times because it is important. It does mean something to me, seeing them completely obliterate another person's desires, their inspirations, their free will is like my kryptonite. I can't just sit down and stay quiet. So fortunately, I am not the other one. This next account, Number Master 22, put out there, this individual who has his own website, I guess his own program on www.courtnapping.com. And he talks about Freemasonry and he exposes it. And he's been going for a while. And in his video, he talks about, you know, his biggest demographics, 18 to 44. And he's really waking up a lot of people. So I encourage you to try and find this guy, perhaps, you know, listen in. His live chats go every Sunday, 8 p.m. Mountain Time. And he just brings truth to power from what he says. Again, I haven't had the opportunity to turn in tune into his program, but I certainly intend to, if not listen to it at least. Another shout out to Slam the Gavel podcast with the host, Marianne Petrie. She puts out a lot of content and she talks about the systemic injustice in family court across the country. And she has all kinds of people calling in, talking about it, exposing it. And although that's great, I believe she is missing the mark because she is not, she's like addressing the Band-Aid, right? The symptoms of the bad decisions and how these judges make these absolutely insane, inane comments and rulings in the courtroom on the official record that negatively impacts the lives of helpless children who are not otherwise abused or neglected. So, yeah, there's an underlying issue to all of those decisions. And that underlying issue is the deep state, Freemasonry. You don't get to be a judge unless you're in the secret handshake club, at least in New York. And I believe she's based out of New York, or at least the Northeast. Yeah, absolutely. So until we get in there and we root out these scum-sucking Masonic pieces of dog shit, it's going to just continue. Okay. And please consider that as a 21st century colloquialism for felons. We need to root out the felons. Next, another Bard's shout out to these two individuals, Jeff Reichert, I believe, and Richard Luthman and Michael Volpe. One of them used to be an attorney here in New York, no longer from my understanding. And they have a podcast on thefamilycourtcircus.com. You can go there and see all of their past shows. I posted snippets from two of them, the first one so you could see their faces and recognize them. And the other one is this woman, Dr. Bandy X. Lee, who testified in hearings that are being held in Arizona by the Arizona State Senate with respect to family court and revamping the family court system. And she goes on to say how she's been, qualified as an expert witness in several courts all over the country. She used to be a professor at Yale and Harvard. You know, she's got all the credentials. And she came in there saying, basically, in a nutshell, I've never seen anything like family court. It's an absolute goat rope. They wouldn't even take my testimony as credible. So go figure, right? Well, that's what happens when you have felons running the court system, right? It's like going to the fox complaining about the other fox stealing the chickens. They're in the same hive. They're family members, right? I talked about this too in my past shows. They're brothers and they're sisters. That's what they consider themselves to be, brothers and sisters. And at least under New York Code of Ethics, if that's the case, if one of your brothers or sisters is either an attorney for one of the parties or one of the parties themselves, you as a judge cannot sit on that case. We need to push that as a nation, right? Because that would root them out quickly. Because now you're talking about throwing the case, collusion with the judge. That's a civil rights violation. It's under 42 USC section 1983. Legitimate allegations could be made for that individual, whether it's the judge or the party, conspiring with the judge to win the case, right? And that carries not just civil but criminal penalties with it. So I strongly suggest everyone that's in this space that's trying to bring sanity, if not, civility and constitutionalism, lawfulness to family courts, other courts as well, but let's focus on the weak link right now, family court. You need to get to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is the secret handshake club. We need to, take a page from Vichy France and start looking into that and banning them. It's not unheard of. And I'm going to get into some other things you can do in a few minutes in this show. Okay. So I listened to one of the programs of that podcast I just referenced, the FamilyCourtCircus.com with Richard Luthman and Michael Volpe. And I looked at some of the personalities that they were talking about, whether it's the court-appointed evaluator or some of the judge or the attorneys in the case. And I just want to see what they look like, right? Number one, but primarily focused on the eyes. And for those of you who follow Q, he tells us, right? He teaches us that usually in the left eye, if you focus on it long enough, you can see if that person is being influenced. Okay, so and I'm going to go through these pictures here on slide 11. On the bottom left, that woman, if you look at her as you're looking at it, it would be the mirror of your right eye or her left eye, presumably, right? With this new software with the cell phone, sometimes the picture gets mirrored or flipped. So I don't know what's left or right anymore. But if you look at that picture on your right side, you'll see that that eye is darker than the other eye. Just don't focus on it too hard. You'll miss it. Just gently let your eyes fall onto that picture and you'll pick it up. That, folks, is a dark entity that's causing that. This woman has a dark entity. How it got there, I don't know. But if she's connected to the Secret Handshake Club, that's a very good place to start. And that's the issue. Right? Because they're not just a bunch of liars in and of themselves. They bring in negative entities because of these commitments and these oaths that they take. Okay. Freemasonry, as Jesse Zoboter has taught us, as well as many others, serves the dark. And here's one piece of evidence of it. The next woman, second from the left, you look at her eyes tend to be about the same. Maybe one of them's a little bit darker than the other, but if you just peer into it, it's the emptiness in her eyes. It's the soullessness that is a giveaway for her. She serves the dark by looking at her eyes, at least in my humble opinion. Going now to the third woman, again on the bottom. Again, let your eyes just gently fall on the picture, and you'll see that her same eye as the first one is darker. She too has a negative entity in her, or dark alien. There's a difference. And then finally, the gentleman. If you look at his eyes, clearly there's a difference, right? That left, the one that's on our right side is larger than the other one. That's not normal, folks. That's not normal. He too has something inside of him that's controlling him. So there you have it. In my humble opinion, and my experience, my teachings, and my knowing, that's the heart of the issue with family court. You have these people who are not in control of themselves making decisions regarding good people, people with dark inside them making decisions for people with light and that are good fit parents. We need to fix this as a nation. Somewhere else where you see this discrepancy. When I was in jail back in February or March, I'm sorry, about May of 2023, I came across this article about the Yonkers mayor, Mike Spano, and his brothers running a lobbying firm with business before the city. Completely unethical and certainly violates. I'll say, well, I won't say certainly. I'll back off and say basically they're doing the same thing that Sheldon Silver was doing at the state level, lobbying before individuals and companies that they are employed by or for the government, right? This is, you can dress it up however you want. It's corruption. And when I saw this and it made the newspapers, I said to myself, aha. It's coming out in the newspapers now because the white hats are ahead of this. They know what's going on. So if this is in the newspaper now, a lot of stuff has happened. And I'd be willing to bet dollars to gumballs that all three of these guys were brought into some federal agency and wound up singing like a canary. And they made a sweetheart deal to sell out everybody that's next to them, below them, above them, to save their own rear ends. And if you look at Nick Spano all the way to the left, again, let your eyes just fall on his picture. That same eye, the one on our right side, which should be his left eye. It's a little darker than the others, right? Yeah. Secret Handshake Club. It includes the Mafia or La Cosa Nostra. For years, decades, in fact, it's been rumored that he's a card-carrying member of that organization. And if that's true, then I wouldn't be surprised why he does have some dark entity inside of him. And speaking of New York corruption, of course, we have to include Andrew Cuomo, the Swachim, and his appointee for to be the chief judge of the New York Court of Appeals, New York's highest court, Janet DeFiore, the former Westchester County District Attorney. She left that position in order because she was appointed as the chief judge. You don't get to be the Westchester County District Attorney unless you're very well connected. And she wound up winning the election when the cabal was still in full swing, right? And you don't get to be there unless you're in the back pocket of the Rockefellers, the Clintons, and on and on and on. Because if they can, and they do, right, and George Soros as well, if they can and do fix elections, local elections for prosecutors and district attorneys all over the country, they're certainly going to have the district attorney in their own backyard, because all those people I mentioned live in Westchester County. They're going to have the district attorney and the county attorney, the civil equivalent, in their hip pocket. She wound up resigning in disgrace for some ethical violation. Are you kidding me? The ethical violation that she allegedly made was like not even sophomoric. It was a school kid, a grade school child would know not to do that mistake, but yet she allegedly made it, and that's why she had to resign. Yeah, balderdash. That was just an excuse because she got caught with the goods, and they let her out because she cut a deal, in my humble opinion. And she sold everybody next to her and under her because she was at the top. Out. She sold them down the river and sang like a canary. So all you people out there, judges, the court attorneys, and all you in the legal system specifically, but others as well, if you think that you're getting away with anything, you're not. She sold you down the river years ago. Years ago. Okay? This article came out in 22. 2022, and she had already resigned the year prior or several months prior. So, and that's because that's when the deal was cut. So at least 3, probably most likely 4 or 5 years, she's been cooperating. And they had the goods on her and others. Okay, so now to the meat of today's show. How to fight the system. Part two. First of all, what you need to do is you need to exercise your parental and First Amendment rights. The scenario that I'm going to use today is going to be for those parents, those fit parents, which means that there's no allegations that your children are abused or neglected. Okay? If that's not the case, then you are considered to be a fit parent, which means that you have provided the minimal level of care that's required by the Constitution to prevent them from becoming an abused or neglected child. And if that's the case, then your parent, then the Constitution and the courts are supposed to protect your rights for you to indoctrinate your children, if you will, according to your religion, your beliefs, whatever it is. You have that right. And then when, as they get older, they can voice their disagreement with you in a family setting. And finally, when they become of age, they mature, then they no longer have to follow that. They're no longer under your roof, right? Under your control. So that can be through emancipation at 17 years of age here in New York, maybe through marriage because of that, even at a younger age in other states, I don't know. But so long as you're considered a fit parent, the federal constitution protects your rights to have to exclude people from your children's lives, to prevent other people from asking your children certain questions. Recently, to protect your children from certain scholastic education, right, and lessons, including the whole trans agenda. Supreme Court just came out with that last week, if not the week before. And also your First Amendment rights to not speak to anybody. The Constitution not only protects your right to voice your opinion, it also protects your right to remain silent and not speak. Not just the Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment gives you the right not to speak when being interrogated by the police, but the First Amendment gives you the right to not speak in all other scenarios. And it can actually piggyback probably on top of the Fifth Amendment in criminal cases. Either way, somebody's trying to force you to speak, they can go pack sand if for all I care, you know? And if you insist on your rights, you can do the same. So this give you a scenario. I was representing two friends of mine who had a family together. There were a total of three children. And let me just say, I do have permission to speak about this generally and even to some extent names, but I redacted these letters anyway to try and protect, you know, the confidentiality or the privacy of the individuals involved. But generally, so you have the grandmother, the mother, and the children. When the mother was a child, she was not treated very well at all by her parents, who are now the grandparents in this scenario, but especially the grandmother. Not very nice at all. Then the grandchildren come, and now the grandmother is using the grandchildren as surrogates to further harass and abuse the mother. And it was also wreaking havoc on the lives of the grandchildren as well. So somehow they wound up in family court. The children were never abused, never neglected. There were never any allegations of that. If anything, there were allegations that the grandmother was neglecting the grandchildren's needs, okay, for a couple of them, as far as diet and eyeglasses and things like that. So the parents were given visitation rights, and I read the Excuse me, I read the transcript where this court hearing took place, and it was a complete ambush. The lawyers that were responsible for that order of protection being put in place should be disciplined at the very least, if not disbarred, for what they allowed to happen to their clients. And the court clerk actually stated that she was going to commit fraud in the court papers, and it was on the record. It was absolutely insane. The judge should be thrown off the bench. You know, the clerk should be fired. It was a complete goat rope. But yet here they were stuck with this order that they never really wanted, never agreed to, but it was rammed down their throat, literally within minutes, not given any time to contemplate it. So a couple of years go by, I enter the picture. And I explained to them what was going to happen. And it wound up unfolding exactly as I said it would. I tried to avoid throwing the gauntlet down, drawing the red line in the sand, but I said that this is going to have to be the way it goes if this is the result that you want because of all these other things, right? I'm trying to keep things short here. And I gave them all of the cases that I was relying on. They were well versed in the fact pattern, so that wasn't the issue. And they read the cases. I specifically pointed out the paragraphs that they needed to focus on. We talked about it several times afterwards, so they understood where I was coming from. Well, after we got off that first conference call, right, we had a separate conference call They couldn't believe it. They're like, Mike, I can't believe it. It happened exactly how you said it would. Exactly how you said. And we saw how you weren't trying to cause a problem. We saw how you were trying to avoid, the confrontation. But they wouldn't let you. We're 100% behind you. So I said, okay. So if that's the case, then this is what you need to do to get this guy out of your lives and your children's lives, because he was the court-appointed attorney for the children. And as far as he was concerned, and the court was concerned as well, he was going to be the attorney for the children until they turned 18. So he saw them as a meal ticket. This was his gravy train. Three children, he gets the bill for all three. Wonderful. His name, the first one, was John C. Govenda, based out of Albion, excuse me, Albion, New York. That's upstate near. And we were in Genesee County Family Court. That's going to be relevant in a couple of slides. So I sent him a letter, which is on slide 14, all the way to the left, right? It's addressed to him. And I basically, in a nice way, said, thank you for your services, but they're no longer needed or required. You're no longer representing the children. And I tried to be nice about it, right? Well, he didn't like that because he's protecting his rice bowl, right? This is his gravy train. Plus, it's a matter of ego. Like, how dare you try to fire me? I was appointed by the judge. Well, frankly, I don't give a shit who appointed you. The state courts, both the New York Court of Appeals and the Fourth Department of the Appellate Division, which is where this case was being heard, both said that you can fire an attorney at any time you want, whether for cause, meaning they did something wrong, or not. Okay? So, end of story. And that's any attorney in any case. Doesn't have to be criminal only. Any case, you can fire your attorney, relieve your attorney, the term is, for cause or not, for any reason at any time. Right? So here he is asking me to provide statutory authority that allows me to do this, blah, blah, blah. I don't have to do it. Everybody knows you can be relieved. But he's fighting for his rice bowl here, right? So the next letter I sent to him is on page 15. And I had to do a side by side because that one was 2 pages. And I went through it and I explained to him, look, I told you very nicely to get out of the case, right? That you were relieved. My clients, the parents of these children, didn't need you anymore. But you refused. You insist on staying in the case and filing papers purportedly on their behalf and directing my parents or my clients, the parents who were fit parents, directing them and telling what they could or could not say to their own children. I hit the roof. Are you kidding me? Are you out of your effing mind? Who the hell do you think you are telling two fit parents what they can and can't say to your clients, alleged clients, to the children? All of them, the oldest one, I think, was like 10 years old, 12 years old, right? The youngest one was 4 years old. Are you kidding me? So that prompted this letter, which relieved him for cause. In other words, like, you screwed up, you did something wrong now. Like, you're fired because you're bad, right? In addition to that, and here's the key for you folks. In addition to that, I also served on slide 16 a notice to preserve records. Okay? Little background. So whenever a lawyer is sued or gets notice that he's going to be sued or has reason to know that a lawsuit against him is likely, he is obligated or she is obligated to tell their malpractice carrier about it so that the insurance company, their malpractice insurance company, can start doing some research and start gathering facts and evidence to defend against the case, right? And it makes complete sense. And I would presume that the same applies for all professions, all types of malpractice, whether it's medical, mental health, psychiatric, legal, all of it, accounting. all of it. And it makes sense from a defense point of view. If for some reason the individual that's about to be sued doesn't inform the malpractice carrier, the malpractice carrier inevitably, certain in legal malpractice, has a clause that says if you don't tell us and you had reason to know, then we reserve the right to not represent you at all. A lot of times there's a difference between we'll defend you, but if you lose, you have to pay whatever the judge says or the jury says you owe them, right? We did defense. That's all we agreed to do. You pay the damages. But here in that clause, it says we don't even have to defend you. You're out there on your own, buddy. And you know how long that's going to take, how much personal time and effort, not to mention expenses? You're going to spend your entire life defending this one case and the rest of your life, your law practice, your medical practice, whatever it is, that goes down the tubes because you can't do that, which means that essentially in this, you know, this capital economy that we have, capitalistic economy, if you're not making money, you're going to go under. So it's a huge, huge incentive for these people to inform their malpractice carrier. And this notice to preserve records is absolutely abundantly clear that they are the target of a civil rights lawsuit, which means that they, the one that's going to be sued, must tell their malpractice carrier. And as soon as the malpractice carrier finds out that this guy, in this case, the lawyer, is representing three children who are not abused and not neglected, that the parents, fit parents, tried to be nice and told them to get off the case and he refused and started asking or demanding, you know, legal authority, etc., when anyone who does this kind of work knows that it exists, I mean, of course the insurance company is going to tell this lawyer to get off the case, right? So I figured out how to crack the, I cracked the code. I broke their system by going to the insurance company, by making that individual go to their insurance company, right? I didn't file a complaint. I didn't have to. I made him do it by serving this notice to preserve records. And notice how I served it, right? At the top left, it says via first class mail and certified mail RRR, which means return receipt requested. So in New York, that's considered notice of almost any legal, you know, general notice, unless, and there's difference between notice and service, right? This type of notice doesn't qualify for service for a lawsuit, but it certainly qualifies as notice for an upcoming legal proceeding. You know, hey, here's a heads up. So more times than not, this would be more than sufficient just to give them notice or proof that they got this letter. So they would get the same exact letter, one original, one copy. You decide which envelope it goes in. Inside two separate envelopes. One just has a first class stamp on it. The other one gets a first class stamp and the certified mail sticker on it, right? And there's other things that you have to do with it. You have to fill in certain information, etc. So they get two envelopes. And why two? Because if you just do first class mail, they can grab it and throw it out, ignore it, or lose it. Or maybe the address is wrong, right? Chances are they go through the mail and they don't even have to open it. As long as you got the mail, that's good enough. But the certified mail, if you just send that, and let's say you're not home to sign for it, or you refuse to sign for it, you don't know what was inside the mail, right? Or the mailman comes, knocks on the door, nobody's there, so they leave a little sticker. Hey, we attempted to serve something for you. You have a letter, a package waiting for you down at the post office. It can be picked up at this time of date, right? So that proves that the address is good, the certified mail, because if the address was bad, the post office would send it back to you saying, sorry, can't serve it, can't deliver it because it's a bad address. So the certified mail, at the very least, proves that the address is good. And if the address is good, then the law will presume that the first class letter was actually delivered and probably received. And if you ignored it, well, that's your fault, right? So that's why you want to send it two ways. This notice to preserve records is absolutely dynamite, literally, when it comes to getting lawyers or any court-appointed professional out of your case that you don't want them in that. In fact, this works so well that this is the final straw, right? It was a two-step process, but this is the final straw that got me disbarred, the underlying reason in it for it anyway. Because I cracked the code. I figured out how to get their scum-sucking pieces of dog shit out of cases that they didn't belong in, and they couldn't have that. I broke their system. So they had to get rid of me. And they got rid of me through other things. They lied, they falsified, they passed ex post facto legislation to get me disbarred. It's a whole nother saga. But don't be worried about that. That's my issue, okay? And I wear the fact that I was disbarred as a badge of honor, because I don't want to ever be associated with those felons again. So anyway, this is like the last straw. This is the nuclear button. If you're, and I would recommend that you only use this if things are going really, really bad for you. If you're not being allowed to see your kids, and the attorney for the children isn't speaking up for you or telling your side of the story or changing your side of the story, obviously favoring the other side more than you, or a court-appointed evaluator who ignores all the good evidence and just talks about how he has concerns about you or questions about you, but lauds the other side, right? That's there too. I've seen that in my cases as well. So guaranteed to work. If, unless you really take it to a higher level, I should take that back. It's not necessarily guaranteed to work. And I'll explain why. After, oh, let me go back up. So I sent these letters, right? A letter to terminate, and then a letter to terminate or relieve for cause, along with a notice to preserve records to the first attorney, Govinda. Then another attorney was appointed by the court. He looked into the file and he withdrew from the case before I even had a chance to serve him with a letter telling him he was relieved, because nobody else was going to represent my client's children except for my clients, not me, the clients. They weren't subject to the proceedings, right? The grandmother was trying to get visitation rights over the grandchildren, so that she could just further abuse the mother. She really didn't have a bond with the grandchildren. It was completely absurd. So of course I'm gonna fight really hard for the parents and the children too. So the second attorney withdrew. The third attorney happened to have the same last name as the court clerk. Gee, what a coincidence. I wonder if they were related in some way. So we had a court conference, and she was saying, "I'm going to do whatever you say, Judge. I'm going to do whatever you say. Don't worry about it." Well, the next time after that court conference, I served her with a letter and a notice to preserve records. When we came back for another conference, she wasn't there. She withdrew as well. This stuff works like gold, unless, of course, you're this guy, David J. Pajak. He's a county or town judge up there in the Genesee area. Home of the Freemasons, as we see on slide 18. That's where William Morgan lived, and he disappeared. It was found that the Masons killed him because he was going to out them. So they disappeared him. No surprise, he was actually appointed by the appellate division, and he refused to withdraw. So if you get high enough, it could, I don't want to say it could backfire, but you can get some resistance here. But what I did back then was a completely different environment than where we are now, with the MAGA movement, with Trump bringing back law and order to this country, Kathy Hochul flipping and working for the White Hats. I'll bet you dollars to gumballs that the Republican is going to win the governorship for the next election, okay, here in New York. Things are changing. So this is the go-to if you happen to have a lot of trouble with the court and court-appointed individuals. Okay, slide 19, just a reminder, Jessie Zabota, former, I've spoken about her in prior shows, the former Queen Mother of Darkness. She ruled over the four mothers of darkness. She actually was Satan's bride. And she talked to us how there are five different branches to the system, which all serves the dark. Freemasons is one of them. You'll see the others there in the dark. On the slide. And again, this is an ode to those two knuckleheads that were in jail with me. They didn't want me to talk about this. So here you go. I'm talking about it. Finally, we get into Robert David Steele. You remember his big thing was we have it all. And he was trying to tell the cabal to cut a deal. Well, we have it all. And not just them. Here's a post that I found on former Twitter, now X, where it talks a lot about the stuff that I've talked about. Anywhere from slide 21 all the way down to slide 26. Lots of posts talking about the corruption in New York State court system, both federal, state, and local, giving specific facts and questions with regard to some of these felons that need to be in federal prison, and perhaps they will be soon. It depends on the deal that I guess they cut. And then finally, I just briefly talk about this recent post in on forthepeople.space. It talks about how the final coup de grace to the cabal is going to be the new financial system. There's no way that you people are going to walk away from this. There's none. It's done. It's on its way in. And you will be sorely, sorely regretting you not having walked away and run. You know, I strongly recommend that all of you, the deep staters, run to the local FBI office, confess your wrongdoings, come clean, make amends, and then maybe you'll be able to share in the jubilee with us. We're going to stop the kindness. No matter what happens, we're going to stop them. And that includes the Freemasons. You all are part of it. Nothing can stop what's coming. So I encourage you, as it says on the final slide, walk away. So with that, I want to take these last few seconds to say thank you once again to BBS for all the support that you have given me over these last few months. Truly, truly a professional operation that you guys are running. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you to all my listeners and especially the supporters. I love you. I love you all. Hopefully you'll be able to catch me and Antonio in the near future. BBS, please take it away.